Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Jim Blasingame, he's the cyber king of small business. Search Google for small business expert, and he's tops on the list.
I guess that makes you number one.
He's number one on Google and number one in our hearts.
Aww.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, on the first up on the page, on the first page of the Kiplinger Editor this week, you guys talk about losing critical employees. Now, typically, when we think about where we are right now, with all the layoffs that happened and all the cutting that happened, all the unemployment out there, the lack of opportunity to find a new job, if you lose a job or if you leave a job, you typically think of employees as being staying put, as being, you know, taking whatever happens, you know, dealing with it, just glad to have a job. That's been the typical scenario, at least up to now, hasn't it been?
That's right.
So you're saying that might be changing.
Well, we think so, and I think we're telling companies not to get complacent and assume that people are going to stay forever.
Well, I know more than one scenario, Joan, out there where a critical key employee, really an important employee, you know, notified his boss or her boss and said, I'm out of here in a couple of weeks, and because they found another job. I mean, somebody came and plucked them.
And see, that's what we're saying. There are companies that can start to spend again are going around, and as we say, picking off the cream of the crop.
Well,
and that could be your key employee.
Well, and see, what we've been thinking is that they would go get people who were already unemployed. That would be the logical thing to go, you know, go on the different search engines or go to the headhunters or whatever, and identify the people who were already unemployed and get those unencumbered employees. But what you're saying, what my experience has been in as I've noticed the marketplace, is that that's not necessarily what's happening. They're actually going and they're raiding, and so folks, you know, we can't be complacent. We can't take the people we have for granted, and that's what I think that I've seen happen in a couple of cases where maybe the person was taken for granted.
Don't take me for granted,
Joan. I would never take you for granted. I don't think you'd allow that. But anyway, the thing is that you know, Joan, especially now, when we've got people who are we're working them harder than we were before.
Right.
I mean, clearly that's the case, right? Because unemployment's up and productivity
that's
is
true.
Up.
Yeah.
What does that mean? That means people are working harder.
Everybody, you know, lots of companies have fewer, you know, they still have the same amount of work or maybe now more work because the economy is starting to recover, but with fewer people.
Yeah.
So everybody's pitching in and doing more.
So what do we do? What does Kiplinger suggest that we do?
Well, we're saying that you need to take preventive measures, you know, even while asking workers to do more for less. And we say there's some easy and low-cost steps you can do. You need to, first of all, demonstrate your appreciation for your employees.
Attaboys go a long way.
Right. But we say things like, you know, flexible hours and telecommuting options.
Mm-hmm.
And we also say thanks and well done whenever they're deserved. I think that's something that a lot of people forget about.
We have some experts on our show that talk about catching people doing things right.
Oh, yeah.
Jim Ballard is one of those, and Chester Elton is another one. They're often on the show talking about, you know, employee recognition. And Jim Ballard says, you know, catch them doing something right.
That's important. I know.
And so, I mean, you know, Joan, I can remember. I remember moments from years ago when a boss walked up to me and put a hand on my shoulder and said, good job, son.
Yeah.
Or good job, Jim, or whatever. And, I mean, I remember that moment, and that might have been decades ago, Joan.
Yeah.
It makes a difference, but it only goes so far.
That's true.
I mean, you just can't ride your horses into the ground.
Right. No, that's right.
And one of the things we talked about recently, Joan, was you know, it's probably a good idea to go to the people who are left if you haven't hired anybody back and you are working people extra hard, everybody's working harder, is to go to them and say, okay, guys, how are we doing? Are we doing okay with what we have right now, or are we starting to need to hire somebody back? What do you think? In other words, actually get them involved and let them tell you, give you an idea about what's happening.
Well, and if you bring them into the decision-making process, they feel like they have a stake in what's going on.
Yep.
And they feel appreciated.
Right, exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, there's another one on here that I wanted to highlight.
Keep promises. Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, keep promises. You know, if you have to have a pay cut and you say, you know, we're going to restore this next year, well, you really should make good on that promise. And if you really can't, you need to explain
right.
why. You can't just ignore it.
And I'll tell you something else. Everybody has to feel a little pain. If the
yeah.
employees are the only ones who are feeling the pain, the owner, the bosses aren't feeling pain, that's not good either.
Well, and I mean, as employees, we understand, you know,
yep.
we want the company to keep going. We will feel the pain as well, but
right.
just be straight with us.
Absolutely. Well said, Joan. And just in time, too. Quick break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Little Chicago bringing us back. Welcome back, 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame. You're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show. Put a .com on the end of that, and you'll find our website, smallbusinessadvocate.com. Joan Pride is our guest. She's with the Kiplinger Editors, and they have an outstanding website, kiplinger.com. I encourage you to check it out and use it to your advantage, which includes the ability to subscribe to their publications, which will get you to the back of their website, where they got lots more stuff that you can get to if you're a subscriber, and that includes the weekly letter that Joan and I work off of, the flagship Kiplinger letter, and then, of course, they've got three bi-weeklies, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the biofuels letter. And did I mention the tax letter, Joan? There's a tax letter, right?
Yes.
Tax. That's an important letter, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then,
the
of course,
most important.
And then, of course, that magazine thing.
That's right, Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And what about that phone number?
Oh, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
That's right, folks. Toll-free. That's a big deal. Don't forget the free trial, the 30-day free trial. Joan, move over to page 2, and let's talk about the economy, a weak launch for the economy in 2010. Tell
us
about
that. And in fact, just to give you a little news beyond the letter, it sounds like the Fed just met and is saying it doesn't want to raise rates for quite a while.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a two-day meeting this week, and of course nobody thought they were going to raise rates. But Joan, we've got systemic issues mm-hmm. with unemployment, with kind of a despair among a lot of the marketplace, a lot of Main Street businesses.
Right.
We've got such a we're in the doldrums so much. It's almost I actually used the Carter word the other day. Joan.
You said malaise?
I said malaise.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes. And, I mean, I feel I was around in those days. I was in business in those days. I feel a little bit of that right now. And so, coming from the marketplace. And so, mm-hmm. it's there. And,
yeah.
and it's 2010, is not feeling a whole lot better right now than 2009 did. And, You guys say that inventory buildup might have actually created some of the GDP growth in 2009 that wasn't really consumer production.
That's right, which is unfortunate because, you know, the companies had been lean and mean, and maybe they were building up inventories expecting better sales, and then they didn't get them. I don't know.
They might have just gotten great deals.
Yeah.
Take it when you get it.
Yeah.
You're concerned, Kiplinger's concerned that whatever upswing we had is not sustainable, and so that's not great news.
Yeah, we don't want a W.
But you're well exactly, and I don't hear any of the smart people talking about W's, but I heard what's the guy's name, the guy who predicted the crash, I'll say his name in a minute. Anyway. He said he thought we were definitely looking at a U recovery.
Big U instead of a V.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've never thought we were going to have a V. I mean, there's just too much. The headwinds are too strong, and it's too predictable. Down the line, with unemployment and everything, for there to be any kind of a V recovery.
Right.
But and I'll tell you something, Joan. the stock market in the past, we've talked about the stock market being an indicator, you know, a forward-looking indicator. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be different this time.
Oh, do you?
Yes, I do, because I think the stock market right now is reflecting comparables from 08, which were abnormal.
Right.
And so if I'm right, and I hope I'm not right, but if I am, that means that doesn't portend a good omen for the stock market itself for the rest of this year.
That's true.
And of course, everybody knows what a genius stock analyst I am. But
that's why you're a billionaire.
Exactly. Exactly right. I'm glad you pointed that out. But no, I mean, you just folks, it's just common sense, and so that's the reason why, Joan, I'm telling my audience, and I call it tough love. It's not negative. It's not pessimistic, because everybody knows I'm not like that.
Right.
But I do think it's tough love. We've got to continue to operate for survival.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think we need to plan for success, meaning that there are opportunities out there. There are things that are happening that we need to identify and take advantage of. Joan, you guys still say that you think growth is going to be 3% this year. Joan, 3% growth is a pretty darn good bread and butter year, isn't it?
Well, we're nothing if not optimistic, you know.
You're a little Pollyannish on us there.
I said optimistic.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing, Joan, is how much of that growth has been promoted by the government?
Right.
And Joan, we've had recessions that have happened only because the government stopped spending. See, we've had situations like that where the government was spending so much money on a war or whatever that when they stopped, then, you know, they kind of pull the rug out from under the economy.
Right.
And so that's a concern right now. You guys point out this is going to be another tough year for car dealers, new car dealers.
But, you know, I'd be curious to know what you think. We say stability. We say U.S. Sales of about 12 million vehicles.
That's a lot of cars, isn't it?
We say new car dealers, another rough year. But I wonder whether the problems that Toyota has been experiencing this week might change things a little bit.
You mean for American car makers?
For American car makers.
Yeah. Well, tell the audience what happened.
Well, I mean, I can hardly believe this, that Toyota recalled a tremendous number of cars, and, I mean, 8 of its most popular models.
Yeah.
This is millions of cars because of a problem with the gas pedal, and they don't know how to fix it.
They not only recall the cars, but they stop production.
And they stop production. That's
and
right,
and
right,
isn't
yeah.
that isn't all of that, that whole scenario unprecedented?
But they stop production because they don't know how to fix it. Apparently.
Unprecedented.
Yeah.
And so
I mean, to have that many cars
mm-hmm.
with such a problem, that kind of a problem. I know
yep.
friends of ours who have twin babies
yeah.
who have two Toyotas.
Hey, folks, put it in neutral. Just put it neutral. I mean, I'm not being silly. I'm not being facetious. If you have a problem with the accelerator, put it in neutral. Quick break. 10 tails. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 till. A little Norman Greenbaum bringing us back. I'm Jim Blassingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show. And we're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We're working off of this week's Kiplinger letter. Joan, one of the things the president talked about quite a bit last night in his speech was green technology, green jobs. And you guys reported on that this week.
We sure did.
Talk to us about that.
Well, we got some good news here that the federal government wants to fast-track patents for green technology.
Yeah.
Because right now it takes about 40 months, which is, what, that's over 3 years.
Well, partly because the patent office is bogged down.
It's bogged down, you know, not just with those, but with everything.
Right.
So they want to trim that to a year, which wouldn't be bad.
That is pretty fast.
Yeah.
Be very fast. But see, here's Joan, and I know that sounds good, and I don't want to sound like I'm being negative here, but...
But you're gonna.
Well, but here's the thing. He's picking winners and losers when he does that. See, now, so if he...
Well, what would you do?
Well, I would come up with a way to not... If I had a non-green invention that got knocked to the bottom of the heap because of a green invention, I wouldn't be happy about that.
Well, I mean,
I would
it'd be nice
thinking,
to get more patent people over there, but if we're freezing the budget, we can't.
Well, okay, but all I'm getting at is he's picking winners and losers, and I don't think the government serves its public well when they pick winners and losers. And so,
yeah, but my point is, if you've got a 40-month wait for any patent,
yeah.
then there's a systemic problem that needs to be solved, but it would need to be solved with more spending to get more patent examiners
right.
in there.
Well, one of the things that I heard him say last night about the green, about green technology and about energy, overall energy plan. I liked his idea about drilling and nuclear and all that. But he also talked about other things, green jobs and all that. But we need a comprehensive plan for energy that includes a commitment for America to own the energy technology world for the next century,
which really means ramping up quite a bit.
Everything, making it a national movement. Don't hunt and peck. You know, don't just pick winners and losers. Let's make this a national commitment by everybody, and then the government can provide assistance, but get out of the way of the innovators, get out of the way of the and don't care about which technology wins. The one that wins will be the one that's the most efficient and the most effective.
Right.
Let the marketplace decide that.
Yeah.
Now that's what I wish he would do, and maybe that's where we're headed. Maybe he'll get to that point. I hope so. Talk about that. You also report on new technologies. A slew of technologies to cut carbon emissions. What's that all about?
Which is important because that's what government regulation is pushing for. So we say that there are a bunch of utilities that are going to reduce their carbon dioxide output, and we say one technique is combining the waste gas with seawater to make cement.
What?
Yeah.
Huh.
Or making steam power by focusing solar rays using large mirrors at solar thermal hybrid plants. You can see I didn't write this.
Well,
wow.
the thing about this is, Joan, is, you know, it's just, you know how I feel about, he also talked about biofuels. He mentioned that a little bit last night. And biofuels are not going to be a long-term solution.
Right.
In my opinion. Mm-hmm. And some of this other stuff, I mean, instead of, what we need is to let all these technologies have an opportunity. Let them seek investors. If they can sell their ideas, let them sell them to investors. Let the investors put their money in, or maybe they're developed in colleges and universities, and we transfer the technology. But the ones what we wind up with, and we'll probably wind up with more than one, basic technology, which will be good.
Right.
But Joan, I'm convinced. You know, President Obama last night talked about, you know, America's behind China on green technology. Well, you know why? Because their country has making a concerted effort about this.
That's right.
Our country is not.
Yeah.
And
that's the word you said, concerted. That's
what
you need to do.
There's no question about it. So so those are all things that I agree that. But one of the things that he said, and I've said it earlier, and I'm going to say it again, I like the fact that he floated the balloon about more drilling, more nuclear. I think that tips his hand a little bit on what he's willing to do, how he's willing to go. Because, Joan, this energy policy's got to include everything.
Right.
Not just the green stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be comprehensive.
It can't just be the green stuff. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job.
Thank you, Jim.
Appreciate it very much. Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kipling Editor. She'll be back. Next week, in fact. We'll have another round of this with her next week. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.